Today, the central bank rate rise past the parcel continues. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Well, the Bank of England raised interest rates by the most since 1989 on Thursday, and warned investors that the risk of Britain's longest recession in at least a century means that borrowing costs are likely to rise less than they expected. The Bank of England increased the bank rate to 3% from 2.25% and warned that the British economy might not grow for another 2 years. That's the longest slump in records dating all the way back to the 1920s. If rates were to go up by as much as the markets had recently bet.
Today we've increased bank rate by 0.75 percentage points to 3%. This is the eighth consecutive increase in bank rate since December of last year. We've raised rates by a total of 2.9 percentage points during that period. These are big changes. They have a real impact on people's lives. So why are we doing it? And why are we doing it now when so many people are already struggling with higher energy and food prices and other bills? Well, quite simply, we're increasing bank rate because inflation is too high, and it's the bank's job to bring it down. For a long time, inflation had been low and stable. Most people did not have to worry about inflation, but that has changed. It's changed with supply chain problems after the pandemic, the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and the shrinkage of the UK labour force. Consumer price inflation now stands at over 10%. But I know for many people it will feel worse because the prices of essentials like energy and groceries have risen by much more. People should not have to worry about inflation as they go about their daily business. That's why we've been raising interest rates and did so again today. Low and stable inflation is the bedrock of a stable economy, a predictable economy in which people can go about their lives and plan for their futures with confidence, an economy in which hard-earned money keeps its value. If we do not act forcefully now, it will be worse later on. And as the forecast we are publishing today shows, it is a tough road ahead. The sharp increase in energy prices caused by Russia's invasion of Ukraine has made us poorer as a nation. The level of economic activity is likely to be flat and even fall for some time. But the economy will recover and inflation will fall. We cannot, I'm afraid, pretend to know what will happen to gas prices. That depends on the war in Ukraine. But from where we stand now, we think inflation will begin to fall back from the middle of next year. Probably quite sharply. Now, to make sure that happens, bank rate may have to go up further over the coming months. We can't make promises about future interest rates, but based on where we stand today, we think bank rate will have to go up by less than currently priced in financial markets. And that's important because, for instance, it means that the rates on new fixed-term mortgages should not need to rise as they have done. I want to make some additional points, and there will be some slides coming up, I believe. There we are. To start with, there has been significant volatility in UK financial markets since our last monetary policy report, and indeed our last press conference back at the beginning of August. So the lines in this chart show you the peak level of interest rates expected in financial markets in various economies, and how those expectations have moved around since our last forecast. The expectations for bank rate here in the UK are plotted on the turquoise line. At the time of the August report, the market implied path for bank rate rose to a peak of about 3% in March next year. By the MPC's September policy announcement, which was on the 22nd of September, the peak was 5%, 1 year ahead. On the 27th of September, 5 days later, when turmoil in the market was most intense, the path reached its highest peak at nearly 6.5% in November next year. At the market close yesterday, it stood at about 4.75%, and it's currently lower than that now. Given these moves, we have conditioned our November forecast on an average of the market-implied PARVs over the final 7 days of our usual 15-day window. This means that the forecast we present today is conditioned on a PARV for bank rate that rises to a peak of 5.25% during the second quarter of next year. Now, despite the shorter window, this is substantially higher than we had in August. Part of this repricing in UK interest rates reflects global developments, but as this next chart illustrates, there's clearly been a UK-specific component, and you can see that in the light turquoise bars. Indeed, these significant moves in UK yields and in UK financial conditions more broadly have occurred in parallel with significant developments in fiscal policy. As we describe in a box in the Monetary Policy Report, the government has announced an energy price guarantee and an energy bill relief scheme. These schemes provide support to households and businesses with their energy bills. Now, the full energy price guarantee will now last for 6 months. Details are yet to follow on the level of support provided beyond that period. The MPC has therefore adopted a stylised indicative path for household energy prices in producing the forecast. The working assumption is that the typical household energy bill is halfway between the announced £2,500 limit under the EPG and the level implied by futures prices under the Ofgem price cap. The energy support policies are likely to limit significantly further increases in inflation and reduce its volatility, while also supporting spending relative to the August projections. Other fiscal measures announced as of the 17th of October also support demand relative to the August projection. But the November forecast does not incorporate any fiscal measures that may be announced at the autumn statement scheduled for the 17th of November. Turning to gas prices, sadly, as a consequence of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, I've had to talk at length about wholesale gas prices. I think this is the third press conference we've had to do this. Wholesale gas prices continue to be exceptionally volatile. Spot prices have fallen recently, as you can see from the turquoise line in this chart, but medium-term futures prices have been driven higher by Russia's restriction of gas supplies to Europe and concerns about storage over the winter and beyond. Now, you can see that by comparing the orange line for November with the purple line for August. The committee has conditioned its November forecast on the full futures curve for wholesale energy and non-energy commodity prices. And this is a change to the previous convention that wholesale energy prices follow their respective curves for the first 6 months of the projection only and then remain constant. To be frank, I would just describe this as a pragmatic choice we had to make. The new conditioning assumption avoids what would otherwise be a purely mechanical jump in the projection for consumer prices, which would be a product of using the former convention beyond the assumed 2-year duration of the government's support to retail energy prices. Let me move on to the economic outlook. By comparison with moves in financial markets, the news in the economic data since August has been more modest. Gross domestic product has been weaker than we expected. Labour market data have been stronger. And inflation numbers, while high, have come in about as we expected in August. We keep a close eye on the labour market. There are some signs that labour demand is starting to soften, but the labour market remains tight. The unemployment rate fell to 3.5% in the 3 months to August, which is the lowest level since 1974. And as you can see in this next chart, in the purple bars, the number of unemployed people has now fallen below its pre-COVID level. But a key reason why the labour market has tightened since the pandemic is a marked increase in the number of people who are without a job and who are not actively seeking one. The number of such so-called inactive people has risen again since the August report, as you can see in the blue bars, and by more than projected. And sadly, many of the people who are outside the labour market report that they suffer from long-term sickness. Let's say a little bit about the forecast looking further forwards. The MPC expects domestic inflationary pressures to remain strong over the next year, but in its central projection, which is conditioned on the market implied path for bank rate that rises to 5.25%, inflation then falls sharply. It reaches 1.4% at the end of the second year, below the 2% target, and it falls to zero at the end of the third year. Contributing to this fall is the purely arithmetic fact that the previous rises in energy prices drop out of the calculations of the annual inflation rate. But in addition, tighter financial conditions and a squeeze on real income slow demand and eventually lead to excess supply and rising unemployment. This downturn in the economy dampens domestic inflationary pressures. In the committee's best collective judgment, GDP will continue to fall throughout next year and into 2024. Compared with previous UK recessions, GDP remains weak relative to its pre-recession level for a prolonged period. You can see that in the yellow line in this chart. There is, I think, however, more to this story. The committee will not pursue a path that we think will drive inflation far below target. The MPC does not follow the market. It sets the level of bank rate to return inflation to the 2% target sustainably and in a way that avoids undesirable volatility in output. In every monetary policy report, we also publish a projection conditional on a constant level of bank rate, though for the avoidance of any doubt, with the clear warning that it does not mean the committee expects to keep bank rate constant either. But that said, comparing outcomes under this alternative conditioning assumption with outcomes in the central projection gives a sense of how different policy decisions may shape the paths for economic activity and inflation. And you can see that with this chart now, with the dashed yellow line that's been added, which is conditioned on a constant level of bank rate at 3%. And you can see that the depth of the recession is much shallower. Not surprisingly, the projected outcomes for inflation are also different. Conditional on a constant rate, consumer price inflation is projected to be a little above rather than below the target at the end of the second year. And let me add a further point before I conclude. Regardless of the path for bank rate, the MPC judges that the risk to its inflation projections are skewed to the upside. In part, the skew reflects the possibility of more persistence in wage and price setting. The upside skew has important implications for monetary policy. Just to put it simply, yes, we project a steep fall in inflation, but there are substantial upside risks to that path. And it's not least for this reason that the majority of the committee judges that further increases in bank rates may be required to return inflation sustainably to target, should the economy evolve broadly in line with the forecast presented in the November monetary policy report. However, the central projections, conditional on the market-implied path for bank rate, serve as a reminder that we should not increase bank rate too far. The MPC judges that the path for bank rate required to return inflation sustainably to target is shallower than that priced into financial markets. There are, however, considerable uncertainties around the outlook. If the outlook suggests more persistent inflation pressures, the committee will respond forcefully as necessary.
The pound tumbled after the decision, while London listed stocks fell and UK bonds came under pressure. We can't make promises about future interest rates, but based on where we stand today, we think bank rate will have to go up by less than currently priced in financial markets, Governor Andrew Bailey said. Now, just remember, on Wednesday, the Federal Reserve also hiked rates by 75 basis points, but signalled that US borrowing costs would like to rise more than anticipated to crush inflation. That contrasted with the British Central Bank's message on Thursday. The Bank of England says it now expects inflation will hit a 40-year high of around 11% during the current quarter. That's more than five times its 2% target. But it also thinks the economy has entered a recession that could mean it contracts in both 2023 and 2024 and shrinks by 2.9% in total. Unemployment would rise steadily to 6.4% by late 2025, nearly doubling from a current 3.5% rate, its lowest since 1974. But those forecasts reflected market expectations in late October that the bank rate would peak at 5.2%, a level the Bank of England said on Thursday it didn't think it would reach. The Bank of England said that if it did not raise rates further, the recession will be shorter, with a quarter of positive growth in the middle of it and a cumulative 1.7% loss of output. Britain's economy shrank by 6.3% during the global financial crisis back in 2008-09. Thursday's rise in borrowing costs, that's the biggest in 33 years, apart from a failed attempt to support the pound on Black Wednesday back in 1992, was in line with economists' expectations. But the nine policymakers were not unanimous. Two actually voted for smaller increases of a quarter and half percentage point, respectively, highlighting headwinds from the recession. Markets were expecting bank rate to peak at around 4.7%, little changed by the Bank of England's announcement. A dovish 75 basis point hike should be a contradiction in terms, but that is exactly what the Bank of England seems to have delivered, HSBC economist Liz Martins said. Central banks across the Western world, of course, are responding to similar challenges. Inflation has rocketed over the past year due to residual labour shortages and supply chain bottlenecks since the COVID-19 pandemic, and in Europe's case, a leap in energy bills since Russia invaded Ukraine in February. Plus, of course, that massive amount of quantitative easing that flooded economies with significant liquidity and helped to stoke inflation. Britain's new finance minister, Jeremy Hunt, said that the government's number one priority is to grip inflation. And today the bank has taken action in line with their objective to return inflation to target. The Bank of England has faced weeks of political and financial market chaos since its last rate rise on the 22nd of September. Just a day later, Truss's government launched an unfunded £45 billion package of tax cuts that received a damning response from investors, pushing sterling to a record low against the dollar and forcing the Bank of England to prop up the bond market to help pension funds. Truss, of course, had to resign after 44 days in office, but markets are now more stable, with British government borrowing costs broadly back to where they were before the turmoil. On Tuesday, the Bank of England was able to begin selling bonds from its £838 billion quantitative easing stockpile. So overall, sterling fell around 2% against the dollar to 1.1165, and against the euro it was down 1.25% to 87.30 pence. The FTSE closed up 0.62% eventually to 7,188, while the financial services index was down 0.34% to 702.21, and yields on the two-year gilt were down 0.94% to 306, compared with 4.66%, which it reached at the height of the recent crisis back in the end of September. The Bank of England's policy making is made especially tricky by a lack of clarity over future government policy. While most of Truss's tax cuts have been reversed, new Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has indicated that there will be a squeeze on public spending and potentially higher taxes, the scale of which will not become clear until a fiscal statement on November the 17th. The Bank of England had assumed that the government will continue to provide energy subsidies for the next 2 years, but at a lesser scale after April, when an existing support package expires. And under the Bank of England's forecast, inflation is due to fall to below its 2% target by mid-2024, even if interest rates stay at 3%. But Bailey said inflation risks were heavily skewed to the upside and that it was too risky to rule out further rate rises. The Monetary Policy Committee reiterated that it could respond forcibly if needed, and it next announces a policy decision on December the 15th. So Britain is headed for a deep recession, with the Bank of England working to clamp down on inflation in a move that may cost the economy at least 500,000 jobs. The outlook underscores the headwinds that Rishi Sunak's government faces in the run-up to the next election, with the Treasury planning a package of spending cuts and tax increases, which, as I said, will be announced on the 17th of November. And while economists are relieved the Bank of England and Treasury appear to be working together again after an ill-fated stimulus package abruptly ended Liz Truss's term as Prime Minister, the result will be bitter medicine for the people in the UK. In fact, the Bank of England's move is another sign that Britain is moving further away from the US economically, with the prospect of a soft landing receding. The Bank of England Governor Andrew Bailey struck a relatively dovish note, warning that markets were pricing in too many rate rises for the UK. That marked a sharp contrast with Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell, who on Wednesday said that US rates will probably go higher than people are thinking. The Fed was saying that markets were underpricing the terminal rate, said Charles Hepworth, investment director at GAM Investments. The bank went in the opposite direction and said markets are overpricing the terminal rate. This is entirely down to the fact that the UK economy is in a much weaker position than the US. Bailey has to strike a difficult balance with inflation at a 40-year high of 10.1%. That's five times the BOE's target. Policymakers are signalling rates will have to rise further to prevent a wage-price spiral. But by pushing back on bets investors have made for rates to peak at around 5%, he may help the Treasury stabilise the public finances. The Chancellor Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, is seeking to fill that £50 billion gap in the government's budget, and lower interest payments on the government's burgeoning debt would, of course, make a big impact. Every 1% fall in short-term interest rate projections spares the government around £10 billion. Ahead of Thursday's decision, markets expected rates to peak at around 4.75%, but Bailey suggested in the press conference that the level was too high. The path of rates is likely to be nearer the constant path than the market rate path, with rates at 3%, he said. The goal of both the Bank of England and the Treasury is to limit the time that consumers and businesses suffer from high interest rates. After more than a decade of rates below 1%, the Bank of England has raised borrowing costs eight times since December to contain soaring inflation. That, combined with the market shock caused by Truss's tax cuts, have sent mortgage rates soaring above 6%. Bailey said homeowners should see an easing in mortgage rates after recent spikes that threatened to add around £3,000 a year to the costs of an average home loan. The rates on new fixed-term mortgages should not need to rise as they have done, Bailey said. And if traders were in any doubt about how they should respond, Deputy Governor Ben Broadbent spelled it out, adding that the market's job is to follow us, not for us to follow them. For Andy Burgess, fixed income investment specialist at Inside Investments, the Bank of England's stance signalled a welcome return to the period before Truss's disruptive 44 days as Prime Minister. In her tenure, she set fiscal and monetary policy against one another, with one foot on the brake and the other on the accelerator, as the International Monetary Fund put it. The reverse is now happening, Burgess said. Taken at face value, a looser monetary policy and tighter fiscal policy seems to be on the cards, he said. As bad as the Bank of England's forecast seemed, the real picture actually may be worse, though. Sunak and Hunt are preparing a fiscal squeeze of around £35 billion on the economy on top of the monetary tightening announced on Thursday. None of that was factored into the Bank of England's forecasts. In fact, Broadbent said it was likely that further rate rises will be necessary as well. An important caveat to the MPC's projections is that they don't include the looming fiscal consolidation that is set to be announced on November the 17th. The scale, timing, and to a lesser extent, composition of that package of spending cuts and tax rises could have a material impact on how far the MPC lifts rates. All else being equal, tighter fiscal policy requires a looser stance from monetary policy. Yet the Bank of England's forecast suggests rates may not need to rise much further, if at all. Inflation, though, is expected to peak at 10.9% this year, but is then back to target, well, around 2.16%, almost back on target in 2 years' time, assuming rates remain at 3%. But of course, that's just a bit of hopium, really. The problem is that a weaker trajectory for interest rates weighs on the value of the pound, which continued to fall against the dollar on Thursday after the Bank of England decision. A weaker currency adds to the costs of imported goods and tends to push up inflation. Broadbent, though, was unapologetic about sterling's reaction. We are in a very, very different position than the US, the deputy governor said, noting that higher energy prices are hitting Europe harder than the US. And Bailey indicated that having the Bank of England Treasury working together will help bring confidence to markets, perhaps reducing the price investors charge to buy UK government debt that cropped up during Truss's short tenure in office, because the risk premium will be diluted. But he said there had been a risk premium on the UK rates, but there will be some lasting effect. We have to work very hard to put that in the past. And over in New York, US stocks closed lower for a fourth consecutive session on Thursday, as economic data did little to alter expectations the Federal Reserve will continue raising interest rates for longer than previously thought. Following the Federal Reserve statement on Wednesday, comments from Fed Chair Jerome Powell that it was very premature to be thinking about pausing its rate hikes sent stocks lower as US bond yields and the US dollar rose, a pattern that extended into Thursday. Economic data on Thursday showed a labour market that continues to stay strong, although a separate report showed growth in the services sector slowed in October, keeping the Fed on its aggressive interest rate hike path. Years ago, the Fed's job was to take away the punch bowl, and that balance is always a very difficult transition. You want the economy to slow to keep inflation from getting out of hand, but you want enough earnings to support stock prices, said Rick Meckler, partner at Cherry Lane Investments. It's about the rate of change as much as the change. So that the rate of change starts to slow, that almost becomes a positive, even though in absolute terms we're going to continue to see higher rates, and higher rates means more competition for stocks and lower multiples. Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 0.46% to 30,001. The S&P 500 lost 1.06% to 3,719. And the Nasdaq Composite dropped 1.73% to 10,374. While traders are roughly evenly split between the odds of a 50 basis point and a 75 basis point hike in December, the peak Fed funds rate is now seen climbing to at least 5%, compared with a prior view of a rise to about 4.5 to 4.75%. The US 10-year bond closed up 4.16%, up 0.86%, while the 2-year was up 0.67% to 4.7327. By the way, still therefore in recession inversion territory. Investors will closely eye the non-farm payrolls report, which will come out on Friday, for signs the Fed rate hikes are beginning to have a notable impact on slowing the economy. But the climb in yields weighed on mega cap growth companies such as Apple, which was down 4.24%, and Alphabet, which lost 4.07%, and also pulled down both the technology and communication services sectors, making them the worst performing during the session. Losses, though, were curbed on the Dow thanks to gains in industrials, including Boeing, which rose 6.34%, and a 2.2% climb in heavy equipment maker Caterpillar. Qualcomm and Roku shed 7.6% and 4.57% respectively after their holiday quarter forecasts fell below expectations. It's worth noting, with roughly 80% of the S&P 500 companies having reported earnings, the expected growth rate is 4.7%. That's slightly up from 4.5%, which was the expectation at the start of October. So a couple of observations here. Clearly, there are some differences now between the strategy in the US and in the UK, because, of course, a lot of the UK problem has been self-made in recent times, thanks to the Truss event. But nevertheless, the thought of a recession going on for perhaps 1 or 2 years with higher unemployment, which is what the UK is now facing, is very concerning. And it is worth reflecting that not all households will be equally impacted. In fact, when interest rates rise and when inflation is being driven lower, it's a very unequal battle, with many people not really feeling it, but others very much caught in the crosshairs. And by the way, that is part of the problem, not only in the UK, but also in the US, and here in Australia too. And that, of course, is the problem, that this interest rate lever that the central banks are using is so, so blunt. Not everybody is in the same financial position, but unfortunately, those with more debt, those with more limited incomes, and those whose earnings capacity is also being curtailed will be very much in the crosshairs. And unfortunately, those making the decisions in the central banks, who continue to be well paid, and the politicians who pontificate about this so much, really are very much insulated from the reality that many people are already feeling and will ahead. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.